Live from the Nasdaq market site overlooking New York City's Times Square, this is Fast Money. I'm Melissa Lear. Traders on the desk are Tim Seymour, Karen Fireman, Dan Nathan, and Steve Grasso. Feeling the burn, investors slamming the brakes on Peloton as it makes its debut. So is the IPO market showing big signs of cracking. We are digging in. We've got an earnings alert on Micron. That stock moving lower after reporting results. The company's conference call is about to get underway. We'll break down the big headlines. And later, beyond loving it. Mickey D's sinking its teeth into the meatless craze. We'll have all the juicy details straight ahead.
Oh,
we begin.
You like that?
No, I wish I did. We begin with another tech wreck on Wall Street. The FANG stocks fumbling in today's session, adding to an already rough week. Facebook, Amazon, Netflix all posting big losses over the past few days. So is this FANG free fall going to start taking down the broader market? Tim.
Well, you know, some of this FANG free fall is something I think we saw 3 to 6 months ago. Clearly, when you got some of the regulatory headlines on DOJ in June, you saw some big moves. Facebook and Google really had a tough time getting out of their own way. Amazon, which effectively got back up to all-time highs and has not exceeded that. So I'll let the chartists talk about that. But when you think about what the market has been doing for the last month and then the last 4 or 5 months, yes, we saw this interesting rotation into more cyclical stuff about a month ago. But really, the defensive rotation is something that's been alive and well for probably 6 to 9 months, as evidenced by utilities. That is an environment where I don't think you can see FANG outperform. That's an environment where I think the multiples have finally caught up to a lot of these stocks. I know the multiple on Google, not so much. I know the Google on the multiple on Facebook, not so much. But I think, again, you've got regulatory pressures on top of very high multiple stocks. And we could get into the fundamentals on Netflix, but, you know, I'll leave that for somebody
on top
as well.
Of that powerful rotation that you also brought up into value stocks.
Right, into value. I actually think that Facebook and Google could be considered value. I think, you know, for a while, they'll just sort of trade with the headlines on antitrust. But I think it's going to be another 3.5-4 weeks before we see earnings. To me, that's what that is the ballast for these stocks. If they return, you know, if they continue their growth trajectory, then I think the stocks will be fine. Today, it was off. It was off more. Closed. It didn't close in the high, but it didn't. You know, down less than 0.5%. I like Google here. I like Facebook too, even though obviously bad headlines, it could trade down.
You know, you mentioned the chartists. I mean, just looking at Amazon and looking at Facebook, what I think is really interesting today is that these stocks are broken below the uptrend that's been in place from their December lows. You know, I think it is important to remember that when those DOJ and the FTC headlines came out in early June, these stocks got nailed. And they're up considerably from then, but they've really stalled at a point where they never made new highs with the market. The S&P has made 2 new highs since then, and they did not confirm those highs. And when you look at those sorts of breakdowns below those uptrends, you start to say to yourself, okay, what is that next thing? It is earnings. And I'd say for Amazon, this could be a really dicey quarter for them. Last quarter, they saw revenue acceleration. They saw unit acceleration. They had put in place in the spring this one-day prime shipping. But what they also saw is expenses go up, way, way up. And the stock has really stalled since then. So when I think about Amazon, that's the one I think has got a lot of risk, at least on the expense front. And we know that when these high multiple stocks, this is high multiple. This is not value like your Google and your Facebook. It can be unforgiving. And just think about Netflix now, which is down almost 40% from its highs, never made a new high with the S&P.
I think it's about positioning. I think it is about value. It is about growth. I don't like Google. I don't like Facebook because of the regulatory hurdles. I don't like Amazon. I think it sets up to be a real disappointment. But what I do like is Netflix. Microsoft.
Oh, yeah.
Apple.
Going back to his MAGA.
Oh, right, Microsoft and Apple. I think those are the ones that can lead the market higher.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not the FANG. I don't think FANG.
So it doesn't matter. If FANG falls out of bed, in your view, that's not a problem for the market?
No, it's a problem. I don't think we can go dramatically higher, but I don't think we necessarily have to go dramatically lower.
As long as we have MAG.
As long as we have MAG, I think I think we're okay there because Apple and Microsoft, those charts look intact to me.
Yeah, I would just mention one point. One of the things that's interesting about Netflix, and we know it's a $100 billion market cap company. We know the other ones in MAGA are $800, $900 billion ones, and they have a much bigger impact on the broad market. But what's interesting about Netflix, and it goes back to your point about positioning and sentiment, is that this was a much-loved story. People really didn't care that they would lose $3, $4 billion in free cash flow to compete on the content front. And now they do. And that's really what's most...
subscribers were really growing.
That's right. And then last quarter...
Last quarter.
So people didn't care
people didn't care about the multiple in Amazon for years as well.
That's right.
And I think you bring up.
But that's my only point. I'm not telling you that's going to happen in Amazon. I'm just saying it.
Well, for all you guys who love your MAGA, and I realize there's different color hats over there with your MAGA, but
mine's blue, his is red.
I don't like the multiple in Microsoft. And I tell you, I think cloud, and we saw this with Amazon, and that may be one of the reasons why Amazon's been under more pressure. AWS is not growing as it used to. The margins are not there. This is a highly competitive, and maybe it's not commoditized yet, and I do think that very few can compete with Microsoft in terms of a multi-platform offering. But there are those that can, and pricing has to come down. It's not going up.
I don't know.
I don't know if it has,
but when you look at the revenue sources that you see in Microsoft, they're evenly split. Like, you know, Apple were worried that services are not going to come on strong enough. But when you look at Microsoft, they're pretty evenly split. And I don't know if people can compete with Microsoft to the extent that you think they can. That's why I think it stayed on top of the hill.
But to Tim's point, that AWS did actually see margins go down in that last quarter. That was something that people were concerned about. And ultimately, if they want to kind of protect their market share, they're going to actually have to compete on price. And that's when you get to this commoditization.
Well, Bezos told us, Jeff had told us, this was going to be an investment cycle for him. And when he does that, it scares me because it's almost a warning sign where he's just floating out.
Money.
Saying, we're going to spend money. Right. You're not going to see any earnings. So just be prepared for that. But we're still cool.
The broader question, though, is in this market environment, would you be worried that higher multiple stocks, and we've seen this already for a lot of the software sector, come and cloud stocks for that matter, come off? I mean, isn't this the environment where you sell right now?
Of course. Look, you don't have the growth to justify the multiple, and you have a market that is not growth at all costs. In fact, so it's nice that we saw the rotation into value and cyclicality. But again, I think that was defensive rotation, frankly, with the exception of banks. Mm-hmm. What we saw in a lot of those names, I think, are places where people feel comfortable hiding. And so that is the environment, and it is as encouraging as it has been that, hey, we've been looking for market breadth, and people have said, hey, you're never going to get led this market higher without the transports and the banks. That's nice, although transports.
Is the rotation to Microsoft defensive as well? Is that what you're saying?
Microsoft historically would have been. Mega cap tech would have been defensive. These other names we mentioned would have
been. It's crossed the line
if certainly the Facebook chart and the Netflix charts are terrible charts, as you point out. Those are head and shoulders charts that look like you're about ready to test down to the other shoulder. And these are massive market cap weightings in this market. So we haven't really talked about Apple, but Apple's the one place that I think, along with Google, you have a little bit of a combination of a chart, a valuation, and some momentum.
But with Apple, you don't get a DC trade. You don't get that headwind the same way that you get it with a Google. They are all over.
Okay, but you do have a company that's potentially in the crosshairs of a trade war, right?
We know that already with Apple, and it seems to be impervious to that at this point. Not that it'll never back off on that, but it seems like the thunder is taken out of the sail. I'm going to mix metaphors at this point.
Well, hold on. Speaking of the trade, we've got a news alert on trade. Let's get to Kayla Tausche in Washington with the very latest. Kayla.
Hey, Melissa. Three sources close to trade talks tell me that next round of U.S.-China talks will take place in Washington October 10th and 11th. Of course, next week you have a politically sensitive holiday on October 1st for the Chinese. And then on October 15th, you have that delayed escalation of tariffs. So this round of talks will fall just between those two dates on the calendar. The Treasury Secretary has already confirmed that Vice Premier Leo Ho will be leading that delegation to Washington. It's unclear whether Leo Ho will be carrying the title of special envoy, which allows him to negotiate directly on behalf of China's leader, Xi Jinping. And that will be a busy week for President Trump as well. His reelection campaign just announcing he'll hold a rally in Minnesota the evening of the 10th. But perhaps on the 11th, we could see another Oval Office meeting. TBD, though, Melissa, but October 10th and 11th, for those playing at home, the dates to circle on your calendar.
Kayla, remind us just quickly, Liu He had the title of special envoy, correct? And then that was pulled?
He did. For multiple rounds this spring, he had the title of special envoy. That was one of the reasons why he was meeting with President Trump in the Oval Office, because they were on, as the Chinese saw it, equal footing, because Leo He was seen as being there on behalf of President Xi. He then was stripped of that title for a later round in May, when the Chinese backtracked from some of its earlier promises because of consternation among hardliners within the Chinese Communist Party. So there has been a divide over whether he should have that title restored. We don't know whether he'll carry it this time.
All right, Kayla, thank you. Kayla Tausche in Washington with the very latest. We expected the trade talks to happen, but of course, in this world, anything could have happened. So maybe it's good that we got confirmation at this point.
It's good we got confirmation. I don't think anybody is surprised by a headline that gives you, you know, kind of a 3-week window to begin to prepare for a conversation that may or may not happen after an important communist holiday that no one's going to get in the way of. So, I mean, look at the trade data last night in Hong Kong and in Singapore. Their industrial production in Singapore was down 7.5%. It was supposed to be flat. If you look at the export data out of Hong Kong, down 7 straight months and not getting better, it's a concern.
Okay, we've got breaking news on the IPO market. Let's get to Dom Chu at headquarters. Dom.
All right, wow is all we can say. This is with regard to Endeavor. This is the mega talent sports management agency out there. It was set to put an IPO price tonight to trade tomorrow. Breaking news now. This is courtesy of Dow Jones, citing sources familiar that Endeavor has pulled its plans for an initial public offering. Also that it was, again, that it is looking due to weak stock market investor demand. That's according to a source at Reuters as well. So there's a lot of fluidity happening right now with regard to why Endeavor has pulled its pricing. Remember, earlier today, folks, it had reduced the size and scope of its offering. They reduced the shares they were going to sell. They reduced the price that they were going to sell those shares at in what some reports had claimed was weaker investor demand. Sources told us at CNBC that there were some good demand for those shares at prices lower than what the previous range was. But now it looks like, according to at least Dow Jones and Reuters sources, both saying that they have pulled the IPO due to weak stock market demand. This is, again, after it scaled back its offering, guys. We'll continue to monitor this. We'll kind of make some phone calls on our side here. But that's the reason why we're seeing this kind of news cross the wires. Melissa, I'll send things back over to you.
Dom, just quickly, the language is important. So it is not just withdrawing it or delaying it. It is abandoning its IPO.
Well, this is no formal announcement from Endeavor or its underwriting banks. This is source reporting from both the Wall Street Journal and Reuters saying that they are going to abandon their initial public offering following weak stock market return. There is no indication right now formally from the company with regard to whether or not those plans could be resurrected at some point in the coming days or weeks or when the IPO market starts to pick up again. We are going to make some phone calls on our end here, but when we hear back from those, we'll let you know. But that's the reason why this is, again, source reporting from those news outlets. This is not a confirmation by the company. That's important to note, guys.
Right.
Back over to you.
Dom, thank you.
Sure.
Dom Chu. So many questions surrounding this Endeavor deal. The first one is, how do you get to the eve of your IPO and then realize at that point, after scaling back the IPO earlier in the day, that there is weak demand for this thing the night before?
Well, I think clearly Peloton did not help, right? So just the sentiment, right. I mean, last night it looked like Peloton actually would do okay. Maybe this morning actually was indicated at one point up, right? It's closed down a lot. That clearly isn't good for them. I think that, you know, we have a market that has sort of turned on money-losing but growing entities, right? And this one is sort of a difficult one. It's a mishmash of different businesses. They say it's impossible to replicate. That may be, but it's also very hard to value. And it's losing a fair amount of money. I think there's such momentum when they start down this process. It takes so much energy to get an IPO done that, you want to really get it across the finish line almost at any price just to sell some and be public. But I think they're probably doing the right thing. If they did it, priced it tonight, it would not trade well tomorrow, almost regardless of where they priced it.
Yeah, I think you're also forgetting the fact that we've seen some of the biggest IPOs in a decade in this year, 2019, and most of them are underwater, right? So you have people who are sitting with these names. They gave their indications about where they thought the valuation was going to be. It was tricky then. But here we are months now with sitting with losses from Uber, from Lyft, from a lot of these other ones. And the little ones, the ones that did really well, the Zooms, they were so small, they didn't make up for all that stuff. So at this point now, you still have some of this funky valuation stuff going on, and people are saying, I'm much lower. And that's just that simple.
Well, I don't want to run ahead. I mean, I know we're having a big IPO discussion later on in the show, but here we are. So, I mean, in terms of talking about this topic, you know, you've got a dynamic where, first of all, most of these guys are coming to market. Nobody needs to buy the stock anymore. Anyone who wanted to own this stock bought it in a private market that's become very sophisticated, very deep, and very liquid. You also have a dynamic where I think you've got a number of companies where, you know, frankly, you have leadership issues, and people have truly questioned whether this is the right leader to take them to the next phase. They should have made these decisions before they went public in many cases, because these are not startups. They're mature companies.
Yeah.
And finally, you have the banks. I mean, think about Wall Street or whoever's doing this. I mean, you know, there's a total conflict between what the banks want and what the company wants.
What
the public wants. And clearly, you have CEOs and, again, leadership that want to get liquidity in their underlying business. So to answer the question, how can you get to the night before? Because no one wants to believe that you're running out of gas. No one wants to believe that this IPO market overall is caving.
But it is atrocious.
Everything
the night before. And it really speaks to the risk off trade that you see in the overall market. All the IPOs equate to directly to risk off.
It's funny because once upon a time in this market, I'm talking once upon a time like a month ago or 2 months ago, you know, these IPOs were seen as sort of the idiosyncratic growth source in this market. And so people wanted to go value.
Everyone wanted to believe everything
was a unicorn. But then they wanted the idiosyncratic growth as well.
Right.
And here we are, and they're like, you know what? Doesn't make money. Can't see a path to profitability.
You know,
there
is a part of me, Karen, it just said before, you want to push it over the goal line. And there is a part of me that says that you have to price it and you have to cut it just to get it out.
Right.
This is worse. I would rather read the headline that it was priced in the hole. They had to gain some attention.
It's
some
smaller and something. Just kind of right.
I mean, but they back out of it, that's atrocious for the market. And when they come back out, if they ever come back out, it's a wall too high to climb.
But let me just add one thing. We saw Square, right? When Square came public, it was a very difficult tape. And ultimately, they decided, let's just get it done. We're selling a small percent of the company. We'll price it wherever we need to. And that's been a fantastic story.
Sure.
I guess, you know, I think that's an easier sell. Then
how does this raise the bar for the other IPOs that are waiting in the wings?
Well, I you know, throw in their Smile Direct Club, which is down 35%, was, you know, trading at $23 last week. Even like CrowdStrike, which is down 50% from where it was. So the entire bar has changed. I think you have to ask yourself what has changed. It's not just a market philosophy on looking for profitability. I mean, you could look at the high yield market that's having trouble getting deals done, the leveraged loan market that's starting to show some cracks. So when the IPO market is caving in an environment where liquidity is alive and well, you know, I don't want to spook people
for the overall market.
Of course it's been, but I think you said, how does it raise the bar? I think it might lower the bar when you see someone cancel.
Oh, I was thinking that the IPO the quality of that IPO has got to be much higher in order to actually.
Or price much lower. And I think one of those has to give. But it's the value aspect where we start to see that rotation again kick into high gear, where people are grasping on value versus any type of growth, whether it's a unicorn or whether it's a large cap tech name.
Well, to your point about Canary, I mean, WeWork will be a footnote for decades to come. You know, this may never trade in the public market. There may be bits and pieces of it that do. But, you know, did they redefine?
Dan, where's your office?
What's that?
Where's your office?
Redefine a commercial real estate business? Yes. Were they very disruptive? Yes. Were they led by some very interesting entrepreneurs that did some things? Yes. But that doesn't mean it has to be a $50 billion market cap company that's raised tens of billion dollars in the private equity markets and debt markets and that sort of thing. So to me, that's what's different. And I think it's really interesting. When I started this business in the late 90s, there were all these four-letter names, XCIT, YHOO, AMZN, and no one knew what the heck they did, and no one was using really their products yet, and they didn't really have revenues. They certainly didn't have profits, but it was an exciting thing to think about how that was going to change the world.
They were young companies.
They were young companies. And that's, I guess, the point I'm trying to make. These are very mature companies that have been very disruptive. But the inability to articulate their path to profitability is the thing that's going to keep them in the doghouse probably for years to come.
All right. We got to take a break here. Coming up, Tesla revving higher as CEO Elon Musk promises record delivery numbers are on the way. We've got the details ahead. And later, Beyond Meat teaming up with McDonald's. We've got the details. We're live from Times Square in New York City. Much more Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. Tesla bouncing today as CEO Elon Musk promises record-breaking delivery numbers are on the way. Phil LeBeau's got the details from Chicago. Phil.
Melissa, this comes from a report that was in the website Electrek. They say that they have an internal employee email from Elon Musk where he says the company has a shot at delivering 100,000 vehicles in the third quarter. Now, remember, Tesla reports Q3 deliveries next week. And as you take a look at their deliveries year to date at just over, 158,000 vehicles, they have already guided to 360,000. So let's say that this report is accurate and that he says we've got a shot at 100,000 and they deliver 100,000. That would bring them up to about 260, meaning that if they can replicate 100,000, at least 100,000 in the fourth quarter, they would hit their guidance of delivering between 360 and 400,000 vehicles. Again, Tesla reports Q3 deliveries next week. And by the way, Melissa, 100,000 deliveries, that would be a record. The previous record was set last quarter when it was 95,000 vehicles.
Well, you know, for somebody who doesn't tweet anymore, it's really great that news
emails
like this can somehow still make it out to the media and investors and, you know.
We asked them for a comment. We said, could you release this email? Do you have a comment on this? We heard crickets from the official PR people at Tesla.
All right, Phil, thank you. Phil LeBeau in Chicago. Wedbush coming out also saying that they doubt that Elon Musk and Tesla will actually hit the consensus numbers for deliveries when they report earnings. But here we are, up 6%.
And down 27% year-to-date or thereabouts. But the tax credit, I think, goes away completely as of January 1st. So maybe there is a pull forward of people still. So trying to say maybe we're not doubting him completely on this point, maybe there is a pull forward that he sells a little bit more ahead of that tax credit going completely off.
I'm not doubting him completely. Phil said next week they put out the numbers.
Yeah.
So he should have a pretty good sense, right? Pretty good.
Which he's not supposed to release, by the way.
That may be. That's never been his thing.
But I mean, is the CEO allowed to write an email to his staff?
Well.
Which is what this was.
The fact that we're focused on deliveries right now, I think, is the wrong focus. Because, again, this is a company that had 95,000 delivered last quarter. They lost a lot of money. They've got a major cash problem. They can't make this car profitably. They can't make this car at $35,000. They can't make money. So, first of all, are we now focused on deliveries when we haven't been focused on deliveries before for every other quarter where they don't make deliveries? So if you want to focus on deliveries now and get excited about them possibly coming up with 100,000 and maybe through front loading a lot of sales to get to the bottom end of a 360 range with zero profitability and a big cash burn, knock yourself out. But a 6% pop on this news should not be, you should be taking.
Wasn't the original guidance like 360 to 380 or something like that when they gave it? Yeah,
the beginning of the year.
I'll just say this. I'm kind of with Karen, you know, a week before the end of the month, they're probably going to get pretty close. Your point is like how much did they pull forward to do that? How much is in the channel?
Are they profitable? Can they survive?
Well, first of all, they're not even supposed to have a channel. Channel, but we know because we've all gotten emails that there's lots of cars out there.
Right?
I got one.
I
want to make one point, and I want to tie together what we saw this week with WeWork. Let me tell you something. If this guy is talking, if they come in at like 85,000 cars, sooner or later, I think that he runs the risk, even though he owns this board, of being removed from this company because at a certain point
What's the trigger, though? What's the pain point? Because WeWork had a massive outside investor,
Corporate governance was the biggest issue why Adam Neumann's not there. Okay, you don't think that people have massive issues in corporate governance with Elon Musk?
I do.
He's one of the biggest abusers in the entire public market.
Why hasn't it happened already?
One of his big VCs on the board. Larry Ellison, his best buddies on the board.
It seems like it's already, everything's been triggered already.
Well, sometimes, though, you know, when you take a few hits at something like this, we've seen now some big, big CEOs gone over some issues like this. I'm just saying it opens the door for
that should be a positive.
They are public already.
Yeah.
So there's that
difference.
Yeah, it's true.
We got a news alert here on Las Vegas Sands. Let's get back to Dom Chu with the details. Dom.
All right, so Melissa, what we got are Las Vegas Sands shares spiking by about 4% on roughly 87,000 shares of aftermarket volume. This because there's an announcement saying that Las Vegas Sands is going to be the newest addition to the S&P 500. It will replace Nectar Therapeutics, which is now a $3 billion company, having lost about $6 billion worth of market value over the course of the past year. Las Vegas Sands goes into the S&P 500. For that reason, those shares are up about, again, 4.5%, 87,000 shares of pre-market volume. We'll keep an eye on the other shares. Nectar not really moving right now pre-market, but there have been just around, we'll call it 130,000 shares in the aftermarket session for Nectar, guys. Back over to you, Melissa.
All right, Dom, thank you. Dom Chu back in the newsroom. Up next, we're keeping an eye on shares of Micron. That stock is under pressure after reporting results. We'll bring you the very latest, plus another crypto alert. We'll find out what brought down Bitcoin today. Stick around. Fast Money be right back.
Investors pumping the brakes on Peloton. What the big drop means for the IPO market. Plus, McDonald's getting in on the fake meat craze. But will investors have the appetite? We're digging in when Fast Money returns.
We we've got an update on the Endeavor IPO. We're hearing from the company that Endeavor is postponing its IPO. Earlier, we had reported that sources had said to Dow Jones that it was abandoning the IPO, but it is postponing the IPO, the implication being that the IPO will happen at some later date. But remember, it was expected to begin trading tomorrow. Earlier today, it had already downsized its offering and lowered the range, but we aren't going to get that IPO, at least for now. Moving on, recapping some earlier news out of D.C. that U.S. and China trade talks are now set to resume on October 10th and 11th. Our next guest, though, says do not hold your breath on a trade deal happening. Let's bring in Morgan Creek Capital Management CEO Mark Yusko. Mark, great to have you here on set.
Thanks, Melissa.
Not going to happen.
No, never. I mean, I even wore my trade war tie.
Is it's that a panda
on one side, panda eagle on the other.
Oh. Little
tug of war. Look, there's not going to be a deal.
Uh-huh.
There was a potential deal maybe in the March time frame, and U.S. backed away from it. That was all that China was going to take. U.S. wants China to admit wrongdoing. There's no chance they're doing that. So there's not going to be a deal. And the real problem that I see, this is a solution without a problem. Even if we announce a deal, what's going to change? Right? Global trade is not going to bounce back. There's not going to be really anything material in the numbers. It's like NAFTA. They changed three small things. They put a new name on it. They call it a big deal. It's not a big deal. You know, we're going to make a big deal with North Korea. Bupkers, nothing. We're going to make a big deal in the Middle East. Nothing. So there's a lot of talk out of Washington, D.C., not a lot of action. So I think if people are betting that the market's going to rally on a trade deal, sure, they'll be short covering short-term rally, a couple days. But long-term, the fundamentals. I love that I'm not the outcast anymore. You guys were all talking earlier about problems with growth and the
Mark,
FANG
stocks. Did you think you were an outcast before? Come on. We never made you think.
No. You didn't make me feel that way. But I mean, there was a lot of bullishness, not here necessarily, but on the market overall.
Yeah.
But there's been a lot of ebullience, and I just don't get it.
You still, and fair warning, I mean, people out there might still think you're an outcast after we go over what you think the markets are worth right now.
Because
you actually think that they're overvalued and the markets would have to fall about 49%.
49 to get to fair value.
Outcast.
Okay. Remember, when we were together.
How do you get to that number?
Well, again, we were together a year ago, right? October a year ago. And you asked me what I thought of the market. And I thought it was 40%, need a 40% fall to get to fair value. Okay. We're about the same level. The problem is earnings are less good. Earnings have fallen dramatically in the past year. So now the P.E. ratio is higher, the valuation is higher, the Q ratio is higher. Every measure of valuation is much higher. We're 91%-ish overvalued on a number of indicators. That would take 49% to get to fair value.
Mark, so going back to global trade, let's just say we get some sort of skinny deal that really is just focused on the trade deficit. And I think that is something that we should expect because it's really something that doesn't really take some substantive deal. If tariffs are an enforcement mechanism for a deal, will tariffs come off immediately, in your opinion? And is that one of the reasons why you don't see global trade bouncing back so quickly?
Yeah, again, I think the tariffs are a tax on poor people. So it's a really bad plan. It's always been a bad plan. You know, two words, Smoot, Hawley. Yeah. Tariffs have never worked. They're not going to work this time. It's a bad idea. Should they come off? Absolutely, they should come off. They never should have gone on in the first place. The problem is we're still fighting a war in Washington that doesn't exist. It went away 20 years ago. 20 years ago, it was all about made in China, right? We outsourced labor and pollution to China. They sold us cheap goods, and everything that was bought was made in China. My friend's daughter said, I thought you said Santa Claus brings the prices. Honey, he does. Why? They all say made in China, okay? So now it's not about made in China. It's about made for China. China's going to be the greatest consumer market in history over the next 20 years.
They know that?
Oh, I absolutely know that. That's why they're spending on
infrastructure. No, do they know that? I mean, they've been waiting for that to transpire, and it doesn't seem like that has transpired.
Oh, no, it is transpiring. They've taken 60% of their population out of abject poverty over the last 20 years. They've increased the standard of living. Go to Shanghai and see just the huge increase in population that is wealthy and middle class. The middle class is rising at an alarming pace, and all of this quality of life, the import numbers, you talked about the export numbers. They don't care about exporting anymore. It's all about importing. It's all about doing deals to grow consumer, technology, healthcare, consumer. The five biggest sectors over the last 50 years in the United States are going to be the five biggest sectors in China over the next 50.
Mark, let me ask you, so you have this pretty dire, outcasty kind of prediction. What is going to be the trigger, do you think, to
Well, I just said the market's overvalued. The market can stay overvalued
for
a long time, and it has. Remember, a year ago I said it was 40% overvalued. Okay, it went down 20, and it was on its way to correcting. And the way I talked about it was, I said it would fall low single digits last year. It would probably fall double digits this year, a replay of 2001. And then it's 2020 that I'm worried about. That's when the debt bubble pops. Look, corporate debt in this country has doubled.
When you say pops, what do you mean?
Meaning pops. I mean Enron, WorldCom, bankruptcies.
But what triggers that debt bubble to pop? I mean, is it a recession?
A recession.
Growth.
Yeah.
Okay.
Recession, decline in growth, decline in the export numbers. All the things that we're seeing.
But right? Last year, though, Mark, wasn't that bigger issue when rates were going higher, right? So refinancing all that corporate debt at much higher rates had the potential, even in a just a smaller pullback in the economy. Now rates are much lower. Is that going to kind of put it off?
50 basis points lower, and they're back where they were before they raised 50 basis points. But my thing is, it's all about growth. And growth is gone. You're seeing it in the big growth names. You're seeing it in the big valuation drops. You're seeing it in IPOs being canceled. You're seeing it on the streets, right? You're seeing not as much traffic. You're seeing not as much tourism. Planes actually have room on them. So when growth slows, debt becomes less serviceable. And I think that's where we're headed. So it doesn't have to be the big, bad, ugly 2008 recession. Remember 2001, first quarter was negative. Second quarter was positive. Third quarter was negative. Didn't even have two back-to-back negative quarters. Full year was 1%, but it was still a recession. The market still fell 54% peak to trough. And so I think that's the type of cycle we're in. Now, are we there? The problem with recessions is they're always called ex post, not ex ante. So we could be in a recession, and 6 months from now they call it and say, oh, it started in August. It started in September. I don't know.
Quickly, before we go, Bitcoin was under 8,000 earlier today.
Buy it.
Regardless, though, of the drop, if I said to you Bitcoin dropped to 5,000, you'd say buy it.
Buy it. Because here's the thing. The daily price of Bitcoin doesn't matter. It's been alive for 10 years. In every year, other than one, 2015, it's made a higher low. The market cap has grown every single year. Every fundamental indicator of Bitcoin, usage, wallets, block size, transaction size, number of transactions, every single one, hash rate, making new highs. All of the indicators of the network and the network value are rising. The price of any asset fluctuates. Let's take Amazon. Amazon's been a public company for 20 years. In every year, including this year, it's had a double-digit drawdown. The average peak to trough, minus 31%. Twice, minus 90%. When was the right time to sell? Never. Who's owned it since the IPO to today? Jeff and his mom and dad. That's it.
All right. We're going to leave it there, Mark.
All right. Thanks.
Thank
thanks
you,
for having
Mark Yusko, Morgan Creek Capital.
Outcast.
A.K.A. Outcast.
Singers, right?
Mark likes EM.
Well, I tell you, if you have a trade deal of some kind, even a headline, I think you have a dynamic. I actually look at some of the emerging market Asian currencies, and I see some downside skew. And I think valuations are extraordinarily interesting. But if we're all talking about growth, and we're all talking about credit issues, I've seen this movie so many times. EM's not going to rally.
Coming up, check out shares of Micron falling after hours. We'll give you the highlights from the call. Plus, Carnival Cruise getting crushed on earnings today. And options traders are betting on even more trouble in paradise. We'll break down all the action. Much more Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got an earnings alert on Micron. That stock is down in the after-hours session. Josh Lifton has been in on the call in San Francisco. Hey, Josh.
So, Melissa, you know, this stock had surged more than 50% year-to-date heading into this print. Now, of course, heading lower here in the after hours. Checked in with Matthew Bryson of Wedbush. He covers Micron, has a hold on the name. Print was fine, in his words, but the Q1 profit guide was disappointing. Investors, he says, wanted to see gross margins stabilize. They are still coming down. Yes, this is a company that does traditionally guide conservatively, he says, but investors were looking for more. CEO Sanjay Mehrotra talking about signs of improving industry demand, but then also talked about what he called near-term macroeconomic and trade uncertainties. What he said about one customer in particular, Huawei, was interesting, and how that uncertainty with Huawei is impacting his business. Take a listen to that.
We have applied for licenses with the Department of Commerce that would allow us to ship additional products, but there have been no decisions on licenses to date. We see ongoing uncertainty surrounding U.S.-China trade negotiations. If the entity list restrictions against Huawei continue and we are unable to get licenses, we could see a worsening decline in our sales to Huawei over the coming quarters.
Now, executives did talk about some of their end markets, too. They talked about mobile. They said their company is still well-positioned to capitalize as 5G accelerates in 2020, but investors clearly not taking a lot of confidence in that. CEO Sanjay Mehrotra will be on CNBC tomorrow morning talking about this report, the trends he's seeing in the macro and trade tensions. So be sure to stay tuned for that one. Guys, back to you.
All right, Josh. Thanks. Josh Lipton in San Francisco. This is one you were watching yesterday, Dan.
Yeah, so, you know, this one's interesting, right? So people are worried about that uncertainty about trade, but really the gross margin decline. I think that's something that, you know, you'll see in this site, in uncertain sort of market, where their OEMs are just going to squeeze them a little bit. And that's what's probably going on right here. But to Josh's point, the stock was up 53-4% into the print. It's rallied 20% in just the last month. So down 6.5% on murky guidance that could get better if there was a trade deal. The stock probably works back to those levels on anything.
If you look at DRAM chart, NAND chart, they all ran up in 2018. Mm-hmm. So customers got ahead and bought DRAM, bought NAND when it was expensive. And then you see it fall off a cliff. It's not about Huawei. This is about DRAM. This is about NAND. This is about supply. This is about demand. And I don't think anything is a tailwind right now for them.
Do you think that they'll all be down tomorrow, right? The whole sector will be down. But do you think the bar is then lowered? There are others who could jump
for
over
for the rest of earnings season.
Yeah.
Yeah, eventually. But if you truly look at, you saw NAND pop a little bit this year, and the stock, Micron, bounced. And then you see NAND flatten off. And DRAM is still in the toilet. So the stock should actually be down there, too. Based on the fundamentals, you should not be buying the space, period.
I think we just needed to see confirmation that the recovery's begun, and this didn't give you that. And I think a lot of people were waiting for that out of these guys, in addition to the gross margin that Dan talked about.
And we've seen this over the last couple of months. We saw Broadcom give kind of guidance that was not particularly great, and that stock has kind of been stuck. If you look at Intel, has given some murky guidance that was a couple months ago, but that stock is stuck in its 18-month range. Interestingly, I think the one you want to watch here is Texas Instruments. They're the one who's been telling us throughout this year where they are in the downturn of the cycle, and I think a lot of investors think they're probably one or at most two
they've
quarters
been very sober
from the end of this downturn. You know, that thing broke out above 120, and I think you could probably trade it on the long side against 120. But if they guide down, the whole space is going down because it just, you know, I mean, I think to Steve's point, I think there was a lot of double ordering in front of what could have been these later tariffs this year.
Okay. Up next, more on the big news we brought you at the top of the hour. Endeavor postponing its IPO. We have the full details. We come right back. Welcome back to Fast Money. Let's take a look at some of the biggest headlines this hour. Endeavor now postponing its IPO. The talent agency group was originally expected to price tonight and make its market debut tomorrow. And our Kayla Tausche is reporting that trade talks between the U.S. and China are now set to resume on October 10th. And then there's Las Vegas Sands getting a boost in the after-hour session on reports. It will now replace Nektar Therapeutics in the S&P 500. All right, topping the tape today, Beyond Meat, McDonald's announcing it will be testing a PLT, plant lettuce tomato burger, at 28 restaurants in Canada over the next 12 weeks. They will use Beyond's line, a product in the new sandwich. The stock popped 11% PLT. On the day. PLT.
Do you think they'll call it McPlant?
I don't know. I mean, McPlant burger?
Well, look, for McDonald's, who has slowly in the last couple of years gone from being outcast to actually being somewhat cool. I know this is kind of crazy. Apparently Dan's going there late night and eating. I think this is a great move. And I think it just affirms that they are relevant again. They are in the mix. And this makes a lot of sense for them.
I mean, there are plenty of people going to McDonald's who look for healthy options. Like, Steve, you go in there and get the artisan chicken sandwich.
Artisan chicken sandwich.
You know,
chicken
sandwich. What makes
it but I think it is, it stands to the point where they're going to start doing some testing here to see what type of demand there really is. Mm-hmm. And the CEO was on today, and he mentioned, is it people moving away from meat or people coming directly in that don't go to McDonald's that now are going for plant-based?
Yeah.
I think that's going to be the fascinating data points that we see out of this.
Would you go?
I wouldn't buy alt meat.
Okay.
I wouldn't buy an alt meat anything at this point.
Why is that?
I'm not convinced it's healthier.
Loaded sodium, loaded fat. I think it's a pretty lousy thing that the McDonald's people did to our friends up north. I mean, literally, like, listen, you guys try this crap out. We'll see how it goes. Maybe bring it down here.
Maybe there's a real because Tim Hortons did that with Beyond Meat. They did that whole sort of rollout also.
They're more open-minded north of the border.
It's
a nice thing we're doing.
A couple monster stocks that have started to roll over that broke these uptrends that have been really steady. Like, literally, you know, like McDonald's, literally earlier this year was trading 170, got to 220. It has broken that uptrend. And, you know, we're starting to see this from some mega cap stocks. And, I mean, these are the sorts of things you want to kind of keep an eye on as the market has stalled a little bit because, I don't know. I mean, that uptrend is broken.
Well, I look at the same chart, and I think that the stock is pausing after a ferocious run. I mean, it's not a surprise it's going to consolidate around 210. So I'm not sure it's broken.
All right. Up next, shares of Carnival hitting some rough waters in today's session. The options market's betting on more choppy waters ahead. We'll break down the action. And there's a look at the Cramer Cam. Jim is talking Peloton's rough ride and how to trade it. That is coming up on Mad Money at the top of the hour. We're live at the NASDAQ in Times Square. Much more Fast Money still ahead. Welcome back to Fast Money. No prizes to be won in Carnival today. Carnival Cruise Line's down 8% after a disappointing earnings report. And the options market is betting that this stock's travel nightmare is just beginning. Dan is here to break down the action.
Yeah,
Dan.
So this one was interesting. You know, before the opening, they report this disappointing result. The stock gap's down 8%. Put volume kind of exploded quickly, five times average daily. And right after the open, one trader went in when the stock was trading about $44 and bought 2,000 of the November 40 strike puts, paying 55 cents to open. That's about $110,000 in premium. Not exactly a huge bet, but it does break even down about 10% from the trading level at 39.45. And I think if you want to think about the levels there, you want to look at that chart. That is the one-year chart. It's been in a very well-defined downtrend. It got right up against it. Bad results. Now it's back down towards the lows. I think the really interesting chart to look at is the 10-year chart here. We're talking about a lot of these uptrends. We've been in a very long bull market. That's the 10-year chart right there. This break puts it below that uptrend that's been in place, you know, since the lows in the financial crisis. So these are the sorts of things I'm just saying. Every segment, I think I brought one of these up. I think they're important to keep an eye on because the technicals sometimes are telling you something about what might be happening in the fundamentals later on.
You know what I think is funny, though, is I would not put this onto Norwegian Cruise Line or Royal. The charts are different. Royal is up 10% year-to-date. Norwegian is up 20% year-to-date. They got ahead of their fuel sulfur emissions. Seems like Carnival did not get ahead of that. And their sourcing is done here, where the consumer is in a much better place than in Europe.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't think it's a joyride at Carnival. I think you have a dynamic here where they put their yield down. They guided down on yield. They have a terrible European business. They have more exposure to Europe. They have more exposure to hardware. And that's something that I think is plaguing this company, unlike some of the peers, even though discretionary should be under pressure of everything we doom and gloomed about earlier in this show.
Right.
Carnival's going to suffer.
Travel should be under pressure.
Carnival's going to suffer.
Yeah. Are you concerned about your airline?
I am concerned about the airlines. I still think they're cheap, but I can't pretend that they're immune. They're not. They're certainly not immune. So it doesn't thrill me.
Yeah. Are you worried about your airline holdings?
I tell you, I'm really not. I think airlines will quickly catch up in a downward move in the economy. Right now, I think they're so much better run than they have, and I think they have re-rated. I stay here. I like the valuations.
Outcast.
What?
Sorry,
what'd you say?
That's the new thing. Outcast. Go ahead.
Andre 3000.
For more options action, check out the full show tomorrow, 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Up next, final trades. Time for the final trade. Tim Seymour.
Wait, Mel, I'll give you $20 if you can give me one Outcast song.
You won.
United Healthcare. Near two-year lows, somewhere around 210. The stock, I think, it's very good support. Valuation makes sense. Finally.
You also knew I had no shot.
I'll take it now. You can pay me later.
Right.
Pay me later.
Near all-time highs, HYG. When markets get ugly, that thing has some downside. Short HYG.
I think you want to be selling SMH. I think this guidance from Micron opens the door for some negative pre-announcements.
It's been my final trade quite often. Lennar, I think it's got about 20% more room to the upside.
All right. That does it for us. We'll see you back here tomorrow at 5 for more Fast Money. Meantime, don't go anywhere. Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.